You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Nancy Giles, in for Allison Stewart. In 1968, the New York Mets finished the season in ninth place in the National League, or second to last. In fact, every season since the team was formed in 1962, the Mets had either finished in ninth place or dead last. At the beginning of the 1969 season, Vegas had the odds at 100-1 that the Mets, called affectionately by their fans the lovable losers, would win the World Series. But of course, as many New Yorkers still recall with great excitement, me being one of them, those odds were defied. Under the new management of Gil Hodges and with a team of incredible young athletes ready to prove their worth, the Mets went from zero to hero in just the span of one season, transforming from perennial losers into World Series champions. Let's take a listen to the moment they won.
The 2-1 pitch. There's a fly ball hit out to left. Waiting is Jones. The Mets are the world champions. Gary Kuzman being mobbed. Look at this scene.
And that was, of course, Davey Johnson, the second baseman of the Orioles, who was then the coach of the 1986 Mets that made that crucial third out. Anyway, I had to throw that in because I knew that. Art Shamsky was a key member of this Miracle Mets team, playing right field and batting 300 for the season. And as the 50th anniversary of the team's astonishing victory drew closer, Art thought that getting some of his old teammates back together would be a great way to celebrate. With the help of sports biographer Eric Sherman, Art and his teammates road trip to California to reunite with ace pitcher Tom Seaver. Their jokes and stories, along with oral histories provided by other teammates, provide the backbone for the resulting chronicle of a year of unforgettable baseball, a book titled After the Miracle, The Lasting Brotherhood of the 69 Mets. You can purchase After the Miracle now, and Art will be speaking at Book Culture in Long Island City on May 30th. We're joined now in studio by the Miracle Met himself, Art Shamsky, and sports biographer Eric Sherman. Gentlemen, welcome to All of It.
So great to be here. Thank you.
I'm absolutely palpitating. I mean, it's that exciting having you here. Can you tell me a little bit about the journey of getting you guys together to go and visit Tom Seaver and reunite for the anniversary this year?
Well, I met Eric, and we both thought about writing a book about this 50th anniversary. This was 2 years ago. And we wanted to, collectively, we decided we wanted to do something different. We just didn't want to do a book that was about every game, and you could just go online and see that kind of stuff. And
right.
There's so many books been written about that team in the New York Mets. We thought we'd try something different. And Eric actually came up with the idea of saying, well, why don't we go out to see Tom Seaver? He's not doing much traveling now. He hasn't been well. Maybe it'd be great to take a couple players out there. And the logistics of that were really a tough thing because we had to figure out who to take, try to get them to coordinate the trip out to meet us out in California. And the real difficult thing was, with Tom not feeling well, we didn't know if we got out there that he would be able to sit down with us, because I did talk to his wife, and she said, you know, Tom has good days and he has bad days. And so really it was a roll of the dice, and to make a long story short, we went out there. When we got there, we found out we thought he would be okay. We went and saw him for the day, and it was an incredible day for us to sit down and reminisce with him and just talk about things that we all felt really strongly about. And we were kids again, and Eric did a great job in putting it all together, and he got a chance firsthand to see the camaraderie that was on that team and the love that we have for each other. And the book is really about that trip out there and some interviews with the players and then coming back from that trip. And it's really a book about the teamwork, about the love for your teammates, and aging. You know, mm-hmm. We all have gone through that, and I think people will find it really interesting to see how it all transpired after 50 years.
Wow. Eric, what was it like for you to tag along on that trip?
Well, so we all arrived. Art and I traveled from New York to San Francisco with Buddy Harrelson. Ron Swoboda flew to San Francisco from New Orleans, and Jerry Kuzman from Minnesota, and we all converged on San Francisco International Airport within 30 minutes of each other. I rented a big van. I'm driving. I got Jerry Kuzman driving shot or riding shotgun. Can you imagine? And in the back seat was Buddy, Art, and Rocky Swoboda. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, the whole experience was really surreal. I've interviewed hundreds of baseball players in the other five books that I've written. But how do you compare? And I'm a fly on the wall and listening to these great stories. And within a few hours, I became one of them. And can you imagine, you know, a kid from the New York area experiencing that and being able to write about it? It was probably the highlight. Well, it was the highlight of my writing career.
I can only imagine, because even looking at the old games and hearing Lindsey Nelson again and hearing those names that as a fourth grader were burned into my brain in public school in Queens, Ron Swoboda, you know, Art Chamsky, just hearing those names is amazing.
And by the way, driving to Tom Seaver's house.
To Tom Seaver's house. It's amazing to me. I was struck in reading the book by how many details you guys remembered, you and the teammates, after all these years. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, for me, you know, a lot of the guys who don't live in the area don't see or don't talk about the team too much. But I live in the New York City area. So for me, every day somebody talks to me about 1969. It was such an incredible year for so many of us and fans and people who were around to see it. And those who weren't even born, who had been told about that team from their parents and their grandparents,
right,
always want to talk about the things that happened. It was such an incredible year with things that happened on the field and off the field. And I think when people say to me, why is that team remembered so well and so, by so many people? I think it has to do with where that team came from. You mentioned before we were known as the lovable losers. I don't get credit for being part of the bad teams there because I didn't come over to the Mets till 1968.
That's so right. You weren't part
of
that
legacy.
I'm not
taking enough blame for that.
It's okay, Art. You don't have to hold that. Okay.
But I was there in 68 when we finished ninth, a half game out of last place. And I think part of the reason that team is loved so much is because of where we came from, the fact that we were so bad, and then we beat an incredibly great Baltimore Oriole team in the World Series. And the other thing I think to remember is what was going on in the world at the time in New York City. The late 60s were such a devastating time for us who were part of life in New York and in this country. The war in Vietnam was tearing the country apart. Assassinations,
right.
The city of New York was going under social unrest, financially, political upheaval. So I think what we did as a team, we were able to make people forget about their problems for a brief period of time. And they've remembered that and passed that on to generations. And I'm always happy when somebody comes up to me. I've even had guys and girls who were in Vietnam and said to me, you know, we were in the worst place in the world. And for a brief moment, you made us feel better about our lives. And I think as a person, I think if you can make somebody feel better about their life at some point, you really accomplished something. So I really like to hear those kind of stories. But I think those are the two things that really resonate with people who remember that team and have passed it on from generation to generation.
There's a great deal of pride and just joy that you brought to New York. I remember that distinctly. You've talked about the camaraderie of you guys and the players. And Eric, I'm wondering for you, as a sports biographer and someone who wasn't part of the team, what was that outside perspective like in to help you tell the story?
Well, I couldn't believe how much they remembered. You know, I mean, you're talking 50 years, and the camaraderie and the back and forth, the joking back and forth, and you know, you had all these dynamics. You know, you had the fact that Buddy Harrelson was Tom Seaver's best friend, and they're back together again. You had Jerry Kuzman, who's a pretty far right conservative, with Rocky Swoboda, who's pretty, you know, they called him the flower child of the team. so there was all of this happening. And, you know, I really thought, you know, I'm going to be a little bit anxious, a little bit nervous. But as a writer and as a biographer, you know, the pressure was on for me to just sponge everything, just
right,
absorb everything and keep everything going and ask questions and make sure I'm recording it in some way. I mean, when I was in the van, some of the stories were so great. I mean, I have to admit, I was writing stuff down as
good.
I was driving and then going back and asking Kuzman or Swoboda or Art later, you know, to repeat that, please, so I could get it right. I was recording. So the weekend absolutely flew by, but it was just a wonderful experience. And, you know, the trip was actually just the spine of the book. You know, the first chapter and the last two, the planning of the journey,
yes,
to Seavers, and then the journey itself. But the middle of the book was incredible too, with the people that we got to speak to. Just real quickly, Ed Charles, he was our first interview, and it was like living history of the civil rights movement, and his relation to Jackie Robinson. So that was intriguing. So there's a lot to this book. It's really like two books in one.
Yeah, there is. I'm glad you mentioned that, because this was a period where, of course, baseball was now integrated, but there was quite a history of segregation and separateness in the Major League Baseball. And yet the Mets seemed to they had an integrated team, and everybody did seem to get along really well.
It was a great group of guys, and you had best of both worlds with the guys. We had a player by the name of Don Clendenin, who really helped us win, and he got to the club in June. But he was an instigator. He was the kind of guy that would yell across the room and get you going, and just loved him for all that. He was a guy that really, he was a clubhouse lawyer. We talk
really?
About that in the book. Yeah, he was a lawyer, and he was a typical clubhouse lawyer, because he knew a little bit about everything and a lot about nothing. But I like to say that about him. But he unfortunately passed away. But on the other side, we had Ed Charles, who was the calming influence on the club. He was a guy that when things would go wrong, you could just say hello to Eddie, and he would make you feel better. He had gone through so much as a player. He should have been in the big leagues a lot sooner and got caught up in segregation and all the problems of the black athletes back then, black baseball players. And Eddie was a real charm on that team, and unfortunately he passed away. But we've lost 10 guys from that team, unfortunately. But there's still a nucleus of wonderful guys, and there's hopefully be a wonderful reunion in June. The Mets are going to do a weekend in June for us, and I think fans will get caught up and really enjoy seeing some of the players again.
Can't wait for that. But going back to what you were just saying about Ed Charles and some of the other black players, you write about the regrets that you have that you hadn't done more in the past to stand up for those black teammates when they had to stay at different hotels. And I'm just wondering, like, you know, what would you have done? What would you do differently, I guess, if you had that opportunity?
I it's interesting you should bring that up, because I look back on that year, particularly 1962. I was playing in Macon, Georgia, a good place to visit once in a while. But I spent a whole summer there in Macon, Georgia. And we had to take the black players and the dark-skinned Cubans to different hotels. They couldn't eat in the restaurants. And I look back on that particular year, and I think about what I could have done or should have done. And, you know, I was just a kid. I was just 18 or 19 years old, just trying to get to the next level. And while we accepted it, I look back on it now and wish I would have done something different, either been more vocal or took a stand and really stood up for those guys that I really felt close to. In retrospect, I'm sorry about that. But again, we were just trying to get to the next level. We were all just young kids trying to make it to the big leagues. And when Eddie told us that story, when I knew about that story from him and the plight he had to get to the big leagues, Ed Charles, I was so sympathetic to those, because he was such a terrific ball player.
Sure.
And we fans were robbed of seeing him play baseball in the big leagues because of it.
Can you tell us, it was an amazing, you guys were young. I think that's an important thing that people can forget. I mean, when I was looking back at the pictures and looking at everybody, it was like, everybody's so young. Gil Hodges, so young. Gil Hodges, who is, I think, someone who's been overlooked by Major League Baseball and should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. I still don't get it. We can talk about that off air. Like, what
we need
can
you
do.
To vote for him.
We
got to
get that going. But he had this platooning. He had this... this policy of platooning positions. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Because I thought it was
genius.
Well, you know your baseball, I'll tell
you. Well, I know my baseball notes. I've got them right here in front of me.
Well, Gil was a manager that managed by feel. You don't see that much anymore in baseball. He didn't need sabermetrics or, you know, the printouts of certain things. He knew his players, and he wanted to get everybody involved on the team. That was the beauty of that team also, because everybody contributed to the success of that team.
Right.
But he platooned in four positions, and at sometimes five positions with the catcher, and I platooned in right field with Ron Svoboda. Collectively, we had a pretty good year together. None of us liked it, because you'd play one day or 2 days and you wouldn't play the next day, or you might pinch hit or something. And as an example, I had a great playoff series against Atlanta and did really well in three games before the World Series, and then I don't start the first game of the World Series.
Ah.
But he didn't send me up to pinch hit in the ninth inning, but nobody liked it. But the problem was, or the reality of it was working, and we all did it because it worked. And Gil Hodges was the kind of manager that it was no nonsense, and he looked you right in the eye and told you where you stood. And we all respected him for that. And looking back on that particular team, he got the most out of four positions that anybody could get as a manager, and I think that was really the brilliance of Gil Hodges being able to do that with so many guys.
It is amazing when you think about it. Baseball players, they say, are superstitious. They're notoriously that way. So luck was on your side when a black cat appeared on the field. Can you talk about that moment and that story? Ivy, feel free to jump in.
No, I was in the dugout because we were batting. I was in right field when that happened. And the cat came out on the field, walked around the on-deck batter, which was Ron Santo, and just peered into the dugout and stared at Leo DeRocher. And I've often talked to Ferguson Jenkins, who was pitching that night for the Cubs, who told me that if that cat would have stared at him, he wouldn't have gone back out on the mound anymore. It was one of the most eerie situations I've ever seen. And you know, what's interesting about that, we've talked to the grounds crew about that cat, and they all told us that they never saw the cat before that game, and they never saw the cat after that game.
Oh, my gosh.
And so either it was a wind-up cat that came out, that some mechanical cat, or it was a cat that knew what he was doing. But
that's
it was
crazy.
One of the most incredible. It was a game like many games that year, which was incredible finishes and bizarre things that happened, but it was a year that still resonates with fans because of that. But that black cat was amazing.
Oh my gosh, I know. Now, you were in no way expected to beat the Orioles. I mean, they were a team that had Hall of Famers, and you beat them in relatively few games. How did you do that?
Well, we lost the first game in Baltimore.
True.
And here's a little bit of trivia for you. I made the last out of the only game we lost in the World Series. I bet you didn't know that.
All right, I'm sorry about that.
Okay.
I'm sorry
about
that.
Well, you know what happened, Nancy, is that we lost that first game, but nobody felt like we were going to lose four in a row after that. Jerry Kuzman was pitching for us the next day. He pitched a great game. I think he had a no-hitter for six innings, I think. And,
yeah.
And Ron Taylor saved the game. And then we came back to New York 1-1. And nobody thought we were going to win the next three. I thought it was going to be a good series. And all of a sudden, we won the next three. Things happened for us, positive. Got a few breaks. Guys got timely hits. Mm. Al Weiss was great in that series. Don Clendenin, Ron Swoboda. It was one of these things that's magical. It's hard to explain. God was a Met fan for sure that year. And it was just an incredible experience for all of us. All of our lives changed October 16th, 1969. I can't begin to tell you all the things that have happened to me, the things that I've been able to do because of winning that World Series. You know, I played 13 years. Nobody really talks about the other 12. It's 1969.
Wow.
And it's witnessed by how excited you were to talk to us about that year. It brings back so many great memories. But to get back to your original question, I don't think anybody thought we were going to win four in a row again after we lost the first. But we had a great team, terrific pitching, terrific defense, timely hitting, and as I said, somebody was watching over us.
Oh my gosh. Eric, what do you think the 69 Mets, their place is in sports history?
I think they're synonymous with the great underdog. You know, it's they've been referenced in movies, in books, in television shows. When you hear the 69 Mets, it's the greatest underdog winner in the history of sports. That's what you think about. So it's short and sweet.
My gosh. What's the most fond memory you have of the win? I mean, watching that seventh game again, the moment when the ball's caught and then the field is filled with people and you see this sort of dust circle. That blew my mind when I saw it again.
We
what
had
comes
three
back to you?
Huge celebrations at Shea then. We had the National League East Championship. Then we had the pennant-winning victory over the Braves. And then we had the World Series. Field took some beating. But I think once that ball was caught by Cleon Jones when he went down to one knee, I think all of us felt exhilarated and we accomplished something that nobody thought we would do. Nobody. Beginning of the season, if somebody said you're going to win the World Series, you could have got 100-1 odds. And I think looking back, just being part of that team, our names were I'll go on in history because we were part of that team. And I think it was great for New York. It was great for our fan base. It was great for baseball. I look back on baseball history, and maybe I'm jaded, and I say this because I was part of it, but the 27 Yankees were historically number one team in baseball history, 47 Dodgers with Jackie Robinson. But I put the 69 Mets right up there for what we did for Major League Baseball, the city of New York, and the country. And I think history will show that it was one of the great teams ever.
That's Art Shamsky and Eric Sherman. And after the miracle, you'll be speaking at Book Culture in New York City on May 30th. And what a pleasure to talk to you and to bring back all these happy memories of the 1969 New York Mets. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks great. For having us.